The opinions and statements expressed in the following program do not necessarily reflect those of WWDB, its staff, or management.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're in the Delaware Valley. Welcome to Town Hall Talk with Pat Dougherty. I'm your co-host, Joe Dougherty. How are you today, sir?
Doing great, Joe. It's a beautiful day in the city of Philadelphia. Looks like we got some of that humidity out. Beautiful day, sun's shining, wind's blowing, everything's beautiful.
And we got a fantastic show planned, great guest. We like to talk a little sports when we start things up, but in this case, first, let's introduce Dan O'Connell from McCann, Dillon, Jaffe, and Lamb. How are you, Dan?
Hey, doing well. Thank you for having me on the radio show today. Happy to be here.
It's great to have you. Certainly, Pat, you and Dan go way back.
Yeah, me and Dan, we first met at, it was called Widener Law School. Now they call it Widener Law School of Delaware, and I think the final name's Delaware Law School. But yeah, we met seven years ago now,
about
Dan?
About that, yeah.
Yeah, so it's 7 years we've known each other.
It's interesting. So I live in East Falls, 5 minutes from here. Okay. And I grew up on the campus of Philadelphia Textile. You ever hear of Philadelphia Textile?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Well, you know, you mentioned they're changing the name of the law firm. Everybody knows that Delaware and Widener are synonymous, but Philly Textile, which was a design school that always had a good basketball program and all them, and I live like literally almost on campus. Now it's Jefferson Textile. Then it's going to Jefferson. Now, that's definitely a different situation because you're talking about a college that used to be a design school, okay? And now, it's Jefferson. It's obviously going. I don't even see where they. It doesn't even say textile. So Philadelphia University, right? Mm-hmm. But I heard some individuals whose kids went there that were a little nervous about the value of that degree. You know, their initial degree from Philadelphia University, because they're not only switching the name of the school, it's like turning a Delaware Law School into a medical school. Of course, they're not, and everything stays. You guys are obviously, but in their situation, man, it changes everything.
Well, I think what it was, when I went to Widener, and I love Widener, it was a great school, it gave me a shot. Probably one of the only law schools that accepted me, and I'm eternally grateful for them. But I think what the reason they're trying to shift away from the Widener stamp, and they're trying to make it Delaware Law School because it's the only law school in Delaware. I think that actually is changing now because the University of Delaware is thinking about putting in a law school. But I always remembered that they wanted to name it Delaware Law School to kind of get the monopoly on that name.
That was what the rumor was when we were at mm-hmm. Widener. The Delaware University was thinking about starting a branch law school for their university, and it seems like Widener wanted to get ahead of some naming and some branding, so they rebranded the Widener Delaware campus to Delaware Law, and their Harrisburg campus they rebranded to Commonwealth Law School.
But the funniest thing was when we were graduating, it was up in the air about what the name was going to be. And I remember I told Dan, I said, look, I don't care what they put on that diploma. As long as they give us a diploma, that's
right.
Enough for me.
As long as it has a JD on it.
As long as it has JD, that's all we need.
You know, it is amazing. You know, and so, you know, I was just, as soon as you said that with the name and all that, I thought about that. And I thought, oh, man, and where we're at, where they're changing everything. Like, in other words, when you name something Jefferson, you're changing the name, you know, the whole direction of the school, right? I mean, at least it perception anyway, right? I mean,
I was actually looking at the university, was it the Philadelphia Arts School, University of the Arts of Philadelphia?
Very interesting.
A very interesting situation. I mean, that to me would be a bigger thing because the idea that the school you went to all those years is no longer there, completely gone, not even a name change. That, I mean, I feel like that affects a lot of people. I mean, I would have been pretty disappointed if I had just graduated from that school.
Yeah.
And then the Board of Trustees come in and say that?
Something happened. None of us, I'm sure, know what happened there. But, man, a little bizarre, wasn't it? I mean, like, yeah. Who knows what really happened there? I know it was money. They couldn't afford whatever was going on there. But I'm wondering if there was any...
And it's interesting. It's happening to a a few schools in the area because I know Cabrini also. This is
Cabrini,
their last
right?
year.
Oh, yeah. And that they changed their name to.
I believe they sold and they're being Villanova. Absorbed by someone else, and that they chose to shut down the Cabrini campus in Monco.
Right. Well, I'd heard that. I think was it Drexel or one of the schools was looking at the School of the Arts, and they chose. I guess they didn't, you know. But there's a lot of history there. I mean, an incredible amount of history there, and you hate to see that happen. There's a lot of great educators, and
I think it is too, Joe. I think a lot of it, and it sounds crazy, but I think a lot of it has to do with artificial intelligence. I think a lot of those areas, like graphic design and all that sort of stuff, there's going to be an asterisk next to a lot of those job descriptions because we don't know what's going to happen with this artificial intelligence. There was a guy, a billionaire African-American, I forget, Tyler Perry. He set up a $600 million production company with editing and all this stuff, and he was going to start his own production company. He was shown some AI video that was about 2 to 3 minutes long. After that video was over, you know what he said?
What?
We're stopping everything.
Well,
pause the entire.
It's program. Interesting you say that because we did a one of our labor shows with the SAG-AFTRA people, right? And Nicole Izanek, and she's the head of SAG-AFTRA in this particular area. And not long ago, within the last year, and that whole strike that they just had was about AI.
Mm-hmm.
And so they wanted to take their likeness. You know, if you work one day, they wanted to be able to video that. I mean, take the AI and you know, so all these background actors, see, and you would lose your job. Like, in other words, you know, right now, it's also about healthcare, but I think the average actor makes $25,000 a year. Okay, not everybody's obviously Tom Cruise and and Brad Pitt and those guys, but... now the backup people there, the people that are doing the secondary roles, they're talking about AI and they're talking about they had to fight for their likeness. Now technology's coming in, and you're not going to fight technology. We all know that, but
and that leads to an interesting leeway into the potential of AI in the legal field. I know Scarlett Johansson recently has filed a lawsuit against OpenAI for the use of her voice. They reached out to her in order to try to get her permission to use her voice for their AI model. And then she said no. And then a few months later, they release it with an almost identical voice. And that just leads into the aspect of if they're going to be able to use AI programs to generate video, audio, photographs that are borderline indistinguishable from the real thing, we're going to run into a lot of future problems in the course of evidence in lawsuits.
I was just going to say, you're talking about the law in regards to legal actions that take place. That makes a lot of sense. Here's something interesting. Look, we're all about business, right? I mean, in other words, you know, one way or the other, you got... So even if you're married?
Yes.
Okay. How many years?
Two. Coming up on my third.
I've had arguments with my wife that lasted longer than that.
Still ongoing.
But, right. So I am proud of it, though. Like, in other words, I'm going on 39 years, I think. 39, right? Yeah.
Better get that right.
It's a long argument.
You can imagine why I'm having a hard time. 1985, July 27th, right? And so... you have a lot of these. So I wrote a book on it and the business of marriage. Okay, even your life, even if you don't own the firm, you do own the firm, but you still it's part of your business. So the business of your marriage, the business of your mortgage and all that. All your finances, all makes sense. We all care about business. It's all who we are. But I don't think, and I do the labor show too here, so with the unions, and I get it. Technology's coming in. Look at right here, right? This is our phone, right? I mean, this is pretty soon we'll be able to drive our car with it. Even probably can drive it now. You guys, young guys, probably, But I don't think you, it's not necessarily a good thing to be putting all those, I think you should get awarded if you can create jobs, okay? It's not necessarily, like technology's coming in and all fantastic. And I get it. It switches jobs to some other industry, right? But my point is, I don't necessarily think because you create, you know, because AI, and by the way, digital, that whoever created digital, same exact thing, okay, is fantastic. And it's going to be, and no one's listening to what I'm saying. But my point is, I think it matters that you're creating jobs for people. I don't think you should necessarily be rewarded for putting 150,000 people out of work. If you own a production company, one of the things should, especially when you're talking about the movies and all that, now not every movie makes $1 billion, but my point is, it should be a sense of pride that you're putting people to work. That's just my two cents.
Well, here's the interesting thing, too. I was at a criminal law symposium in Harrisburg, and they actually dedicated an entire seminar on the use of artificial intelligence. And I can see a huge, there's a drop-off between the younger attorneys and the older attorneys. Now, you have these older attorneys seasoned, but they're used to going into the, looking at the books, pulling out the paperwork, the paper. They actually can touch it,
right.
You can feel it, you can move it around, you can highlight it.
Yep.
They had very little concept of this artificial intelligence. Mm-hmm. They had no idea the concept to them was foreign.
I called you. You've been talking about it for a while now, and I'm like, so tell me about this AI. Even though I've done shows on it, I don't know how it applies to, you know, well,
What I see is it can basically, it's as only as good as the person who's prompting it is at it. It's just like, you know, when can a piano sound great? Only when you have a great musician on it.
Yeah.
It sounds terrible when a person doesn't know what they're doing. But in terms of staff, writing, memorandums, not so much. I'm trying to stay away from the case law itself because there's been some reports that, you know, they come up kind of suspect. But overall, I mean, if you just look at the long-term trajectory, I'll be honest with you, Joe, I don't see how any of us are going to have a job, at least in this type of capacity, within the next 10 years. I don't see it. I mean, you look at every facet of what AI is able to do. I can't look at any field of any field. Maybe.
But in the law, who would I say I have a lawsuit. I just, you know, let me.
You will be able to go home in Philadelphia after the Phillies game. You get hit by a car. You could go home. Now, I'm not saying, dude, I would never advise this. You always want to, I mean, and that's the other thing, too. We'll get into that. I think at the end of the day, if I was somebody who needed an attorney, I don't care how good my program is. I don't care how good the software is. I want a human body in the courtroom. And I always think that's going to be it. But the problem is that you will be able to go home. There will be a program. It'll say, tell us what happened. It will be able to draft up the motion for you, the case law. It's very compelling.
Now, the term for this is destructive innovation. So when the refrigerator was invented, or the freezer, that put thousands of people out of business who were in the ice delivery business. So there was entire industries that have since been destroyed due to new products being invented. Think about photograph development or VHS repair shops, all of these things. And people, at first you say, oh, but what about the jobs we're destroying? Well, there were hundreds of people who went and delivered ice blocks door to door, because then you would put that ice block at the top of your ice box and the cold would go down.
Probably why they called it an ice box.
Exactly. So when the refrigerator was invented, that put thousands of people out of work. But that allowed those thousands of people to then
retrained into
new fields. When you look at it for the legal aspects, I know PATLA or the PAJ just recently sent out an email over the past couple weeks where they sent a new AI program, and they were endorsing it and saying that this is something that we think could be used by plaintiff's attorneys in the Philadelphia market. And I did a test run of it. We put in about 300 pages of medical records, and it gave me a 4-page summary of what was in there. It was chronological, gave you dates, key moments, key diagnosis or procedures. And you start to think, if we're able to use a software to turn thousands of pages, and I've done the medical review as an associate, you get 2,000 pages, maybe 200 of them have key information.
Or five pages.
But you need to look at every page, because if you miss some of that information, you miss key information for the case. So an AI software that can scan those 2,000 pages, create a digestible summary that you can then use. And actually, interestingly, the software cites where it found that information. So then you click on that piece of information in the summary, and it will bring you to page 345 of the 2,000, and it'll show you that exact thing.
I got one for you. I was at the I was at the symposium, and the guy instructing me, this guy, I love this voice from Western Pennsylvania, an old lawyer.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He goes, "Let me ask you something. How many pages can I put into this machine?" Machine, I love it. It's a big machine. The guy said, "Well, I had a deposition, and the opposing counsel sent over about 750,000 pages worth of medical records, and they hid. You know, they did that. They do that tactically, so they can hide stuff, things in there that are, look bad.
Of course.
And they go, 'Here's everything. Take a look at it.'" He says, "I was able to go through that 750,000 page document within 10 minutes, and by the 15th minute, I had my deposition all set up." Now, let's talk about the implications for that. Billable hours. You know, you're no longer going through 750,000 pages. What would take 3 to 4 weeks to go through is now taking 3 to 4 minutes. I mean, I can't even extrapolate what that means. And I'll never forget where I was when I first saw ChatGPT. I was at my wife's father-in-law's house. He's a professor at Iona University. Brilliant guy, very smart businessman. And he says, "I want to show you something." And I thought it was like, you know, father-in-law sent him. It's probably like, you know, it's probably like solitaire online. Wow, you can play solitaire online. Amazing. He says, "Ask it to do something." And I said, "Okay." So I said, "Draft me an article on the dangers of drinking and driving in Pennsylvania." And I looked at it. This was years ago. And I saw that, and I said to him, "This must have been what it was like when somebody saw aircraft take off for the first time."
Wow.
Because I could immediately just see the implications in terms of video. And you will be able to talk into this program. It will be able to see your body, and it will be able to do commercials, ads with you in it, as if you were acting it out. And it goes beyond that. It keeps going and going, and it won't stop. I mean, I just don't see where this ends and how it really impacts the legal field, because you are going to have everyday citizens who are going to have access to these programs that will be able to generate briefings, motions, complaints, interrogatories just as good as the top professionals at firms, you know?
And you know, one of the thing about firms, and it is interesting because now we can kind of segue in that direction, asking yourself, you know, what separates the good firms and you know, from the not as good firms, things like communication, culture, like, let me, you know, like, you know, intake, okay, obviously presentation, okay, you know, you're performing in regards to, you know, doing a deposition, but also, you know, doing an opening argument, okay, negotiation, okay, I'm not saying, I'm just saying that these are things. One of the things about the law, and I'm not a lawyer, but I've been very fortunate to be able to have a front row seat, and that is, you know, a lot of people will say, "Okay, well, I went to Harvard, I went to Yale, I went to Penn, fantastic," but having the ability to, you know, this is a business also, and to be able to have that relationship with the client expectations, sitting people down and being able to communicate and all those things, in a lot of ways, okay, they separate the great firms, no matter if you were number one in your class at an Ivy League school, or you're just a junkyard dog who has a great feel for people and understands the law just as good as anybody, especially in criminal law, knowing the lay of the land. I mean, there's just a lot of, you know.
Yeah, I think the use of AI will actually allow those better attorneys to really show themselves.
Right, right.
Because instead of spending hours drafting some motion or reviewing documents, going over deposition testimony, they can actually be the point of contact for their clients. They can be the one doing the advertising or marketing, going to events, and really growing the firm. And I know I did defense work for a while before I switched over to the firm I'm at now. And you would do your billable hours, which Pat referenced earlier, and sometimes you would get it cut or audited, and they would say, hey, this is a paralegal task. You don't need a law degree to be doing this. You guys should have had a paralegal do it. We're not going to pay the attorney's rate. I'm worried, or not so much worried, but I think it's an inevitability that eventually they're going to say, hey, this is an AI task. You shouldn't have been doing it. You could have easily had a computer do this in 30 seconds, but you build your client multiple segments.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because Zoom has done, you know.
Oh, yeah.
So the pandemic was a devastating thing. And one, if it told us anything, like, you know, it's a real odd, you know, life can be absolutely crazy. So, you know, we own high-rise buildings, right? Mm-hmm. You think to yourself, okay, well, you know, what can screw that up? Okay, you're a defense attorney. You know.
Oh, the easy billables just disappear.
But they just now you're doing Zoom conferences, you're doing depositions. There have even been trials at the beginning, mm-hmm. Okay? So it's amazing how things got impacted. If you were in a hospitality business, as I was, mother of God, I did a show one time, and the lawyer brought in somebody who had just opened up a restaurant. The week or 2 weeks in the before the pandemic, their whole life savings, and also talked about the governors at the time. The governors, they didn't have one medical professional on the governor's staff that determined who were the efficient,
essential workers.
Essential workers, right? Okay, so you never know what's going to hit, and we're sitting in a high-rise building at the time, but it was empty, and so you never know. Just amazing how things that you wouldn't expect, in a sense, you know, that, you know, I can only imagine when the individual who created digital, okay, that was, mother of God, that was the end of so many, and so it's an interesting area. You know,
yeah,
it's
for sure.
Yeah, you know, certainly.
Well, I will say this too, though, is that if there's any attorney out there listening, whether or not they should embrace AI or just keep moving on about it, what the statement is that AI is not going to replace your job, but somebody who knows AI is going to replace your job. That's what it is. It's very similar to when the calculator was invented. Like, if you had an accountant and you went to your accountant and you said, hey, I've been hearing this thing, there's a calculator out there.
Yeah, right.
And he goes, yeah, I don't use that newfangled stuff. You know, that's not necessarily a good thing. You want to stay with the times. And honestly, listen, we've got to be up to date on the law, right? We have to know if the law is changing every day. That's why we're constantly looking at the updates, the case law updates, the newsletters and everything. But in the same breath, you also have to keep up to date with the technology. And the AI is not going away. It's expanding. It's rapidly growing. It's changing every dynamic. And you're going to start seeing it more and more in the court system. But in terms of, see, I'm a criminal defense attorney, so I don't have billable hours. And the amount of time I've saved in drafting motions and drafting memorandums, and even you can talk to it. You can literally talk to it about the case, and it will talk back to you. And I'll tell you something. I won't get into specifics because the case is still ongoing. I had a case where my client's constitutional rights were clearly violated without question, exception, or any regard. Clearly constitutionally violated. I was able to get him released from custody pending an appeal, large part because I was able to speak with the artificial intelligence, and I laid out, I said, this is what's going on. And it's just good for brainstorming. And it gave me so many ideas I didn't even think about. Wow. In terms of arguing it. I went, my goodness. And they go, here's some case law to assist with that. I mean, this is information that would have taken me so many phone calls, multiple phone calls, weeks of investigating, weeks of research. But within 2 to 3 minutes, I had the answer I needed. And because of that, somebody's going to be going home, you know, and they're constitutional.
I'd like to have that AI when I'm arguing with my wife.
It doesn't work. It's not there yet. It's not there yet.
They haven't come up with that.
No.
Here's a scenario, a type of thing.
Oh, that you can put in.
You'll lose.
You'll lose. The AI, if it's any good, it'll say it's not worth your time. Not worth your time.
Throw the towel.
Throw the towel.
So, by the way, what a great conversation. Dan, you know, just bringing that up in regards to how it impacts the law itself, okay, and in a positive sense, I think young attorneys like yourselves, being on the cutting edge with a lot of those things, I'll tell you, being an asset to your firm, and you know, it's just, you know, such a big deal.
Yeah, so I actually heard a story about, I don't know the year, but it was a good time ago when Philadelphia implemented e-filing only. There was a older attorney who his entire practice was him and his wife was his office manager, paralegal secretary.
Yeah.
And when they implemented the e-filing only, he wrote a letter basically stating that I will be retiring due to this. And it was that he wasn't able to adapt with the changing technology. I mean, I don't blame him. He had 40-something, maybe 50 years of practice one way, and then all of a sudden they tell you, oh, you can't do it that way. And he'd already put his time in. If money was right, I could see retiring. But for someone like Pat and myself, who is part of the younger generation, we're going to be coming up in this legal market of Philadelphia, you really need to be ready to adapt to these changes because, like Pat said, someone else will, and they'll leave you right behind.
So I'm going to throw something at you, okay? And we're going to get into, you know, we're going to take a commercial break at the 50% mark at you know, halfway point of the show. And when we do, we're going to come back and talk about that. But energy, okay? Now, who considers themselves an environmentalist? I mean, I would. I mean, we all care about the environment, right? However, there's a big, obviously, a lot going on with renewables and traditional energy. Now, I do a show called The Labor and Energy Show. And you just can't shut down our traditional energy, okay, and just go to renewables.
There has to be a transition period. The infrastructure isn't there yet. I know there was a recent, I believe, $44 million spent in New York City to build electric bus charging stations.
Yeah.
The infrastructure that will be needed to be built to transition from fossil fuels to more sustainable, that it's going to be a slow transition period, but it has to be done eventually in order to move forward. And I kind of see the same thing in the legal field.
Well, what's interesting about that, okay, is there has to be, and the best way to do that, by the way, is to work together and, yes, and to get it done. So here's something, Pat. I want to throw at you and Dan, and I want to remind our listeners, you're listening to Town Law Talk with Pat Dougherty. Dan O'Connell is our guest on the program, and we're, you know, we're talking AI, and we're talking the law and how, you know, technology's impacting, you know, everything that goes on these days, and so when you think about you know, energy, you know, for example, you heard of, obviously, I'm a stupid, we all obviously hear about electric vehicles, right? I mean, obviously, clearly, right? And a lot of us have them, right? I don't have one, but a lot of people who are guests on the shows have them. You throw that word electric vehicle mandate on there. You know what electric vehicle mandate is? They're mandating that by 2035 in certain states, right? Now, all of a sudden, and that legislation's happening right now. Now, all of a sudden, There's an issue because, you know, we don't have the infrastructure. It's going to cause all kinds of situations, you know. So my point is, with technology, even in that area, okay, there has to be a sensible transition. Nobody is against renewables. I got some issues with electric vehicles and the way they're, you know, the critical minerals are mined overseas,
produced,
right?
Yeah.
Of course. I mean, you're using child labor.
Well, that's what always gets me, that, you know, not I know I have some of my great friends who drive Teslas and all these EV vehicles, but there's some people who think, you know, they take it as a point of pride, like, oh, look at me, I'm doing all this good stuff for this, for the environment. Well, you should see, do you know how much energy it takes and how many resources it takes to make that lithium ion battery? And guess what? when those Teslas, when you have to junk those, what are you going to do with those lithium-ion batteries? I think last time
You could say that about solar panels, too,
60 million years before it decomposes. 60 million years for those batteries. But my thing would be this, and I will say this about AI. It's a very powerful weapon. But if there's anybody out there who has, you know, the capabilities of looking, having AI and researching things, you still want to go with the expert. You still want to have an attorney present because, you know, I have a calculator at home, but I still use my account.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, but it's a tool. It's a master-servant relationship. And you see when, if you let that switch, if the AI becomes the master and you're the servant, you're going to put stuff into court where you're going to get jammed up. Michael Cohen, actually, in the his case, he actually went on AI, researched case law, gave it to his attorney. His attorney didn't think nothing of it because he's like, well, he's an attorney. It must be good case law. He files it. And the judge comes out and he basically says, this case law doesn't exist.
There was a recent disciplinary.
You got to be careful. Yeah, you could, because if you tell the thing, I need case law, it is very deliberate with what you tell it to do. If they say, I need case law and you need to provide it, even if it doesn't exist, what do you think it's going to do? I'll make it up for you.
Well,
there you go.
There was a recent decision or a disciplinary decision where an attorney had cited a few cases.
And he got wrecked.
And he had to write letters to each one of the judges that he cited, apologizing for falsely citing them. And it's a miracle he was able to keep his license.
It's like that Marvel Comics statement: with great power comes great responsibility.
Well, it's interesting you say that. Try to fill out a Social Security disability application on your own without an attorney. If you do it, now you can. There's a lot of things you can do without an attorney. The consequences of screwing it up after 6 to 8 months when they get back to you, because it's going to take that amount of time, are absolutely brutal.
Mm-hmm.
So, there are so many things that where you need that that guidance and all those things. And I hope that is going to be at the forefront for decades and decades and decades to come. But it does show you how technology is coming in. And at the very least, it's going to be a great asset and tool to great attorneys like yourselves. Let's do this. Let's take a little break. We're going to have more from Town Law Talk with Pat Dougherty and our guest Dan O'Connell from McCann, Dillon, Jaffe, and Lamb in just a minute.
Patrick Dougherty of the Town Law in Philadelphia is an accomplished attorney with a passion for upholding justice, fostering client relationships, and driving exceptional legal outcomes. A seasoned practitioner in criminal defense and personal injury law, he has built a career marked by compassion, integrity, and dedication to his clients. To get the justice you're seeking, contact Patrick Dougherty of the Town Law, 215-307-5504. That's 215-307-5504. Or go to www.thetownlaw.com and get the justice you're seeking now.
Joe Buck and John Smoltz welcoming you back to the City Center Convenience Mart. Well, John, the stage is set for the final transaction.
That's right, Joe. Heather's moment has arrived, and you just hope all that training pays off.
Heather lays down her purchase, but Randy rings it up as slowly as he can.
He is a wily veteran.
It gives Heather's eyes the chance to wander.
Uh-oh.
Yep, she's looking at the cigarettes.
There's nothing good back there. Quit now, and in 5 years, your odds of getting certain cancers drop 50%.
Meanwhile, Randy's stone-faced. He's giving nothing away. He just stands there, wetting his cashier's finger on that sponge.
Heather toes the rubber.
Here we go. Heather's arm is in motion. But instead of pointing at the back wall, she just grabs the gum off the counter.
That's a slick move.
Heather, back, back, back. She is out of there. Even Randy tips his cap to Heather. Stand Up to Cancer and Rally wants you to reduce your risk for cancer.
Go to takeahealthystand.org.
Right now, someone in the world is trying to figure out what their significant other wants for dinner.
What do you want?
It's not that simple.
What do you want?
It's a devastating process that can make you feel anxious, confused, even angry.
What do you want?
There are millions of people feeling the same dread at dinner time every day. You are not alone. And thankfully, there is support. The National Association for Unimportant Relationship Decisions has free virtual meetings, online support sessions, and a restaurant randomizer, all on an easy-to-use app. You can also also access online forums to receive assistance from other people struggling just like you. The NAURD app was developed in partnership with world-renowned psychologists, marriage therapists, and restaurant owners, all of which have provided a wealth of information for your access. Download the free app today for Apple or Android, or visit NAURD.org for more information. Don't choose dinner on your own. The NAURD is there for you.
Thanks to the NAURD, now she knows what she wants.
The NAURD is not a real organization, and none of the proceeding is true.
Serving my country required sacrifice. Sacrifice that changed my life forever. I remember the day I came home. Because of my injuries, this house wasn't right for me anymore. I remember the narrow doorways, the small bathrooms, the shelves out of reach when in my wheelchair. Every day was full of obstacles. I felt trapped. I remember a better day, the day my family received a specially adapted custom home from Homes for Our Troops. That day changed everything. Now we have a safe and accessible home to enjoy the freedom I fought for. This place, our home, is exactly what we needed to rebuild our lives.
Homes for Our Troops builds and donates specially adapted custom homes nationwide for severely injured post-9/11 veterans and enables them to rebuild their lives. Join our mission at hfotusa.org.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Town Law Talk here on WWDB Talk 860 with Pat Dougherty, our host. Fantastic broadcast. Dan O'Connell's our guest. I'll tell you what, it's awesome to have this conversation with young attorneys. And when I say young, I mean, you guys are in your 30s and have a lot of experience, but where technology is in a sense your right hand. Okay. My grandma used to tell me, you know, getting old ain't for wimps, right? And I don't look at myself as old, but time does fly. And it, you know, wasn't, I can't even believe I'm sitting here talking about my first cell phone in, you know, like in 2000 or 2000 or something crazy, right? But here we are now. And I just love hearing, you know, like, you know, the cutting edge and this is the age of technology, and it's coming in like what we're talking about. And certainly having young individuals who are improving, their firms and the industry by being able to take advantage of these, the technology advancements. Let's jump in a little bit, Dan, and Pat, first, if you will, you're the host of the show. Talk a little bit about, obviously, your area of the law, what the firm does, and so our listeners, just a little reminder for our listeners.
Yeah, so again, my name is Patrick Dougherty. I'm the founder and partner of the Town Law LLC. We're located at 1650 Market Street, Suite 3669 in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and our primary areas of practice are criminal defense and personal injury law. Now, if I were to take a percentage of what we do, I would say 65 to 70% is criminal, and then the remaining percentage would be personal injury. So we are mainly a criminal defense firm.
And you have a great network, you know, of individuals like Dan who,
well,
there's literally no type of case that you can't, if you don't do it, you have a great network of trusted attorneys that you can direct somebody to.
Well, that was always my thing when I first started practicing. I would see some attorneys that would go, no, thank you. We don't do that area of law. No, thank you. We don't do that area of law. No, thank you. We don't do that area of law. And my thing, it was always like panning for gold. I say, well, you never know where that person's going to end up. You never know, just by referring that person to somebody else, maybe they'll come back.
Well, what you do when you do that, by the way, since you're a lawyer and you have great knowledge and insight on who are the really good lawyers in specific areas, you may be taking somebody who might otherwise make a mistake and go into some particular area, or you can direct them to somebody who is a pro like Dan.
Well, there's a law firm, and the other thing too is, you know, if you want to be a successful attorney, always look at what your competition's doing. I always do. I always check everybody's. I know how. I probably know about. I probably know how mostly every law firm, how many Google reviews they have off the top of my head. I know exactly how many Google reviews. Most wow. I know at Glenn.
So you understand the market.
I know exactly. And I'll go up to lawyers.
Which one were you going to name right now?
I'm not. Client Inspector.
Yeah, I don't know who they are. They're like a small Mickey Mouse firm,
right? They got like one or two reviews. They do it. They're a great firm.
Of course, world class.
And that's why you got to look at them. But I've seen there's this one firm, and I won't name it, but they have an immense amount of reviews. Like every day they're getting reviews, every single day. And this friend of mine said, well, they're probably buying it. They're probably buying the reviews. I said, no, I know this person. They're not buying the reviews. And I figured it out what they did. I said, they're not buying these reviews. But whenever somebody calls, no matter what, I think they consult with them. And you know something? I've done that. I've had cases where somebody talked about, my neighbor took my mail, what should I do? Well, I can't charge you for that. But you know what I tell her? I tell you, well, you got to do this, you got to do that, you got to do X, you got to do Y, you got to do Z. And guess what? In 10 minutes, you get a Google review.
That's great.
And that, but it's like, you, when somebody contacts your firm, there's value in it.
Well,
there's always value. And maybe you're not going to get $5,000-$10,000 retainer up front, but maybe you have somebody, when they're down in South Philly getting a cheesesteak, they hear somebody say, I need a lawyer, and they go, I'll tell you what, I just called a lawyer yesterday. Nice guy. Here's his number. That's how you pollinate. And to me, I tell people this. It's not a job. It's a campaign. You are a politician in many respects. You have to present yourself. You have to have confidence.
Well, it's interesting. And jump in there, Dan.
Yeah, so my boss, Robert McCann, we do not do billboards. We do not do commercials. We go off of word of mouth and what Bob calls making a friend.
Absolutely.
So we will often take in intake calls, or we'll take on cases that aren't so much in our wheelhouse at that time. And like you said earlier, if we can't help you, we have a firm friend who can. And making a friend with these prospective clients is very important. I know previously we've called, done a quick, helped some guy whose daughter went to college and they accidentally overpaid for their lease. Well, then the company wasn't going to send them back the $900. We can't charge them a fee on getting them $900 back. By the time we charged a fee, there would be no money left.
Right.
So we made a friend. We wrote one letter, made 2-3 phone calls, and we were able to get a full refund for that client. And then we didn't charge them a fee. And then all of a sudden, 2 years later, they're in a motor vehicle accident. And who are they going to call? Their attorney. Someone who helped them out in the past. So making a friend and just doing good work for people and establishing that reputation of we can help you. And spot that's on. How we build our firm.
Spot on.
Right.
Spot on.
And that is the culture of the firms. A great, by the way, Bob is, McCann has been on the show many times. Pat Lamb as well. So a number of the principals at the firm, the great firm. And that, by the way, and that's why I said at the beginning, I mean, there's to be a good law firm, it's not just about, somebody who knows the law. It's about, exactly what you're talking about, the culture of the firm. Let's talk, Dan, about the types of areas that you guys specialize in at the firm.
Sure. So we do the basic personal injury cases as well as the more complex ones. We have a ton of motor vehicle accident or premises such as like slip and fall, either inside on a puddle or outside on ice, something like that. We have a lot of those cases, but we also do offer representation for workers' compensation. We do a little bit of medical malpractice and stuff like that. So we have a pretty wide net, but it really is all in the personal injury field. And that's why if someone calls up with a criminal matter or a real estate matter, we still take that call, we do the intake, we discuss it with them, and then we pass them along to a friend of the firm.
Yeah, and that's important because God knows, and when you take those referrals, you take as if they're those referral partners, you take as if they were actually at your own firm because they're a reflection on you.
Yeah, you really do need to make sure that your network is filled with trusted attorneys because you don't want to refer someone to a firm that you have no contact with, you've never spoken with before, you're just passing them along to pass them along, then they get bad service. That's a reflection on you.
Right.
And when that word of mouth, they always say 3 good, 9 bad. You tell 3 people about a good experience, you tell 9 people about a bad experience. Well, if even if you are not doing that work, you've referred them to someone, your name is now attached to that work. So if you're going to refer a client to a different firm, you should be able to put your name behind it, that that is a good firm that you're sending them to.
And that's part of the trust level.
Mm-hmm. Well, the other thing too is like, and I think there does need to be some reform with Google. I think the Google reviews do hold an immense amount of power.
Let's talk about that, because in specific areas of the law, and I apologize, in specific, you know, professions, Google reviews can make and break.
Oh, they dominate.
Yeah. So if you're going to get into the law, Pat, you know, and like you guys, the fact of the matter is that if you're old school, and you don't think you're going to accommodate your people, that people got the power now. In other words,
I've seen so many. I've seen reviews on Google from other firms that they get. And they're just scathing.
Yeah, so you can't escape that anymore. If you're in this business, it's a hospitality business.
Well, customer service business.
Absolutely.
I've been lucky thus far, but I always say this. Like,
but you guys are in that business. The two of you guys and a lot of individuals in your age group and a lot of firm owners now, listen, like you said, you either adapt. So the partners at the firm, part of it is adapting and bringing on talent that gets it.
Well, the other thing too is you really have to take every call seriously, within reason. I mean, obviously we're all human, but you really have to realize that, if you treat someone wrong, if you're short with someone on the phone, that could really come back to permanently butt, because once they put that review up, it's going to be up there forever. But what I would say to attorneys is that if you get a phone number that's coming across your cell phone and you're like, oh, I don't want to talk to this person, I always say to myself, well, I don't want to talk to them. But it's not me, Pat Dougherty, the individual who's calling. It's somebody who's representing the firm.
Yeah.
And the firm wants me to call it. The firm is really the important thing. The firm is my baby. And I always think to myself, what's the best thing for the firm? Not me, because I'm watching the Phillies. It's the 6th inning. Should I take this call?
That's a great point.
What long-term will the firm benefit? And that, and being able to separate myself and being called somebody as a representative of the firm, not somebody Pat Dougherty personal time. Now, I'm calling from a firm. It's an organization that I represent. It's a good organization. And we always try and put ourselves out there, because I can tell you, and I've heard this saying, and it is so true. I believe in two things. There is a God, and that if you don't chase the money will come to you. You know, if you get on the phone and you genuinely want to help somebody, it'll come back to you. It will. It will come back.
Let's talk about client expectations. Okay. Mm. What can clients expect, or potential clients expect, when they, either retain or contact your firm? Dan, I'll ask you first.
So one of the things that I do is, from the intake, I give out my personal cell phone number. I want people to be able to reach me if they want to, if they need to. I tell them weekends, nights, doesn't matter. Now, that doesn't mean I'm going to answer every single time at all times, but I do want to make that available so that if, like Pat said, if I'm just sitting on the couch watching the Phillies game, I'll answer. If I'm putting my son to bed for the night, I won't.
But you'll call back.
But I'll call back. And it at least gives them the avenue to open the line of communication. If all they have is my office number, they're going to call during a work day and you got a lot going on, or they're going to call after work hours and either go to an answering service or something like that. So I like being able to provide my cell so that they can shoot a text or something like that, because communication with your client, I think, is one of the most important things you can offer as an attorney. There's going to be many attorneys in the legal market who can give good representation,
but they don't do that well.
But if they're not connecting with the actual person, each case has a human being on the other side. When I did defense work, it was a little easier to separate that, because your client is usually a corporation who then is, your bills are being paid by an insurance company.
Right.
Mm. Working
in, by the way, the benefit of that is priceless now, right? You can now educate your client on what the insurance company's thinking.
Yeah, exactly. And from playing both sides and learning,
sure. You understand, what the games that they play, and you understand, you can position, you can obviously sit there and go, listen, here's what they're doing.
Mm-hmm. But I do think it's very important on this side, and with what Pat does for the criminal law, these are human beings that are your clients. It's not some company usually. And that human being has a life, and many aspects of the case may impact different aspects of their life. And being able to answer a phone and give a just a quick, concise answer when they're in need or have a question, it usually provides a lot more mental solace to them than you're actually giving.
Right.
And it's easy. Well, for us, and it provides a big benefit to the client. It's bigger than they really think, you know.
Right. Well, yeah, I mean,
it's kind of like when you're at the beach. I was down in Cape May this weekend.
I mean, I'll be at the beach, you know, you can see it. Listen, I am a summer guy.
But you know what it is? Like, I never needed them. I never asked for their help.
The
lifeguards. But when I turn around and I see them sitting there, I go, all right, they're there. I know I'm okay.
Right.
Same thing with the client. And here's the other thing. Like, nobody's calling. Most of the time, unless you're doing adoptions or some other minor areas of law, most of the time you're not calling your lawyer in the best of moods. It's normally something bad happened. Right. They always say the three people you never want to call is a priest, a doctor, or a lawyer. That's true. So most of the times you're taking the client, they're not in the best of situations. You know, they need help. And the thing that I love, too, is that being a lawyer is another word for a lawyer is counselor.
Yeah.
And I really do believe that there's two hats with that. You're a counselor for the law, but you're also a counselor, like, you know, like guy who's paralyzed from the waist down after a construction accident. He's going to want to talk to you about other things, maybe not pertaining to the law.
Well, it's interesting. I'm going to spitfire here, Pat, because we only have about 6 minutes left. But talk about, you know, and I'll run to both of these. Talk about that first in a personal injury sense, because you do some personal injury as well. But talk about that first conversation, setting people up for success, because some of these cases can last a long time. So you may be getting calls of impatience or whatever these insurance companies, no matter how obvious it is, are not just passing checks out. You know, they're not, what I hear, they're in the business of taking, accepting premiums, not paying out. Talk about, you know, talking to the client for the first time and setting those, expectations in regards to the ebbs and flows of a case.
Well, I'll tell you this right now. I think there's always the temptation to tell your client the best of news, even if it may or may not be true. You know, sometimes lawyers will get into this trap where they set the expectations high at the beginning by saying, oh, yes, yes, absolutely, this is going to happen.
They're embellishing.
But you know something? Regrettably, I've done that before, and I've done that very few times, but I'll tell you, every time
it bit you in the butt,
it comes back. It comes back.
Well, it's part of your education.
Because I'll tell you something, clients have good memories, and they'll say, oh, hey, last December you said on this day, you know,
it's going to take 9 months.
And you know what? I'll tell you something. Sometimes, especially in criminal cases, and I'll tell you, like I had a guy who just called me on the way over here. He's on his second and third DUI. He says, what am I looking at? I said, you're going to do 15 months upstate. He goes, well, this other lawyer I talked to. I said, the other lawyer you talked to, did you pay him yet? And he says, no, I didn't pay him yet. I said, well, when you pay him, he's going to say what I'm telling you.
Right.
What you got to do is get into drug court. And he goes, well, could I get house arrest? I said, you're going to do drug court, or you're going to do 15 months in jail, and here's my price. And that's it. I said, look, do I want your money? Of course I want your money. Wouldn't I love to get paid today? Of course. Don't you think I could say whatever I want and then you would pay me? I'm telling you the truth. This is what's going to happen. This is a straight up.
I think kind of what Pat was getting into is that some people take the quick route, the easy route in order to get customers, clients, try to make money. From my bosses, from what I've learned is put in the hard work for a long period of time, set your reputation, establish who you are in the market, and the road will pave itself.
I mean, and real quick, a lot of people might walk into your office with all those outstanding attorneys, including yourself, and think that's going to cost a lot of out-of-pocket cost. Is that the case?
No. So luckily for our clients, we work on a contingent fee schedule. So, and that's pretty common in the Philadelphia market for most plaintiffs' work is you don't owe us a dime if we don't win you money. There's no upfront costs. There's nothing out of pocket. It all comes from proceeds of the settlement.
And experts, if you have to do that, comes out of your pocket.
All that comes out of the proceeds of the settlement. And we've had cases in the past, unfortunately, where things don't go our way and the jury rules in the defense's favor. Zero owed to the firm by the client. That is something that's just a cost of business, and unfortunately we have to eat that cost. But that's what you have to do, because you can't leave a client negative $5,000 when they hired you to try to recover money
and,
for
them. And you guys, your track record is second to none. But you have, but this is true life, and so you know, I mean, you know, the clients obviously it's a comfort to know that they don't, there's no out of pocket cost.
Yeah, it must be great to hear that. I know I've heard that during the intake process a lot, and luckily I've been able to learn from a few of the attorneys at my firm that you mentioned, Bob and Pat. Graduated before law school before I was born. So they have more experience being an attorney than I do being a human being. So I've been able to learn and get mentorship from some of the best attorneys in the Philadelphia market. So I considered myself lucky, and I just want to follow their path and continue to give my clients great service.
Contact information if anybody wants to get in touch.
Sure. Dan O'Connell at McCann, Dillon, Jaffe, and Lamb. You can call us at 215-569-8488. That is the firm number. And like I said...
Website?
Yep, McCannInjuryLaw.com. And I'm not shy. I'm going to give out my personal cell, 484-802-3556. If you need a personal injury attorney, please give me a call. I'll help you out as best I can. And if I can't, I can put you in touch with someone who can.
Awesome. Pat Dougherty?
Wow, look at his phone going off. Look at the phone blowing up. His phone's blowing up. So my name is Patrick Dougherty. I'm the founder and partner of the Town Law LLC. Our website is www.thetownlaw.com. We can be reached at 215-307-5504. Criminal defense, personal injury, or if you just need a lawyer to talk to.
Awesome. Well, listen, I want to thank, of course, Pat Dougherty, our host, for another awesome show. Of course, Dan O'Connell.
No, I appreciate you guys having me on. It was a pleasure.
Awesome. Of course, shout out to Matt Menark, our producer. And of course, we want to thank everybody for listening. Shout out to all your, you know,
great partners. Let me take some time to join you guys today.
Absolutely. On behalf of Pat Dougherty and Dan O'Connell, and Matt Menark, and everybody out there listening, I'm Joe Dougherty. Thanks for joining us, everybody.